You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to the Dressage Today podcast. This month's episode is sponsored by Purina. I got the immense pleasure of interviewing Kathy Connolly for this month's episode. I know you're going to love everything she has to say. I was really sad that Aviva wasn't able to join me on the interview because I know she would have had a bazillion more questions. But sometimes in our busy horse world, that is the way that it goes. And I just can't wait till she gets to hear the interview as well. So Aviva, good morning.
Good morning. And again, I'm so disappointed that I didn't get to talk to Kathy, but life does get in the way sometimes.
Life does get in the way. And sometimes scheduling horse people is like herding cats.
Oh, it's always like herding cats. But you have had some amazing, new, exciting things in your life. So tell us.
It has been a busy time. I had 6 days with Mary Wanless, 3 days here at my farm in the middle of nowhere, which I had people fly in from all over the country.
Wow.
And I managed to get a good group of horses for people to ride and borrowed a couple client horses and then used both of mine. Dante went in the roster for two of the instructors that came to ride.
Wow.
And we had a really great clinic, lots of ahas with people. And then I went down to Wellington and I got to ride him with Mary. It was the first day was a little bit like when you've been away for a while and you come back and you get to hang out with your husband and you got to settle back in.
Yeah.
But we settled in and we got to a whole new level of me and Dante.
Yes.
Mary's overwhelming vision for me is to dig in more because I'm all about the harmony. I want it to be harmonious and it should be, but if we could add a little power in there so that we could make it harmonious and wow.
Yeah.
That was our theme. And in between those two clinics, we actually sold our Brooksville farm.
Congratulations.
Yeah, it is bittersweet. The people that bought it are really nice. They're going to run a boarding facility out of there. They did buy the whole 20 acres. And, you know, I wish them all the best. It's just, yeah, you know.
Hard to leave, yeah.
It is. I mean, we built every single piece of anything that's on that property. When we bought it, it was a hayfield. I literally had to decide where to put the well as the very first thing on that property. So it gives me a lot of really good memories.
Yeah.
But selling the farm enabled me to do something that I'd been kind of looking at for a while. There's nothing wrong with Dante. He is absolutely amazing. But as you know, in the professional world, while you've got one showing, you've got to have the next one coming up. And I bought the next one. I bought a horse.
Tell us about him.
I found him on Facebook. And got
How
to know
is
that he is three.
Okay.
Got to know the seller. Broke? No, he is not, because that's really kind of where I like my horses. I like to start them myself.
Okay.
Someone has sat on him, you know, one time, like, hey, look, there's somebody sitting on my back, kind of a thing.
Okay.
He's big. He's dark bay. As my friend Amy says, I kind of have a type. He's kind of big. And
how big is kind of big?
Well, the seller said he was 16.3, and I was like, whoo, that's a little big for a three-year-old. But I'm going to say he might be closer to like 16.1, a hair over 16.1.
Okay.
Right now he's like a big Great Dane puppy. He lost some weight on the trip down, although the shippers were phenomenal. But it's still, he was on a trailer for like 30 hours.
Oh my God, where did he come from?
He came from Indiana.
Okay.
He came from Indiana, and he is Danish Dutch harness horse cross.
Okay.
And his name.
Yeah.
This is the best.
Okay.
His father, his sire is So Perfect, which is a big stallion over in Europe. And I guess they just gelded him because they're working on his showing, but they saved semen. So his name is So Special.
Oh my God. What a great name.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
And
so what are you going to call him in the barn?
Well, I'm trying to work on that because the name is so amazing. But, you know, I'm like, do I call him Spec? What do I call him? Special? What do I call him? Yeah. And my accountant, who is a very dear friend and an amazing accountant, has said to me, when you sell the farm, don't buy another horse. Don't buy another horse. Don't buy another horse. So I had to call her up and say,
I bought another horse.
Well, and she's in the middle of tax season. So that just makes, you know, makes it a little extra special there. So we chatted for a little bit and I said, okay, I'm going to make you mad and I'm sorry, but I didn't do what you told me to do. And I bought another horse. And she's like, ah, I'm so mad at you. And her name is Georgianne. So I said, well, if I name him George for his barn name, would that make it better? So we're kind of leaning towards George, which is, you know, kind of an ignominious name for a horse when his real name is so special, but he does kind of fit into the George category. He's a little bit doofy.
And I think George is a great name.
So
you have to remember, I have a horse whose name is Ralphie.
That is true.
You know,
that is true.
I mean, sometimes
yes.
The names aren't what we want, but it suits the horse. So
yeah. Yeah. Well, we're just trying to, he's been here for a little over a week. Right now, I'm just trying to get hair off him and weight on him.
Yeah.
He is out with Dante. Dante's his new best friend. And I'm just kind of watching him going, wow. And you know, the coolest thing, Aviva, when I put them out the first time, I looked at Dante and I went, oh my gosh, you aren't the baby horse.
Yeah.
And it was like, it took me seeing
a baby,
another horse.
Him. Yep.
Yes. And I went, wow, you're the big guy now. Like you're the dude. You're not a baby horse that I happen to be, you know, doing all this cool stuff with. Like you are the dude. So
yeah.
It was kind of an interesting realization.
Well, good. Because, you know, I think one of the hardest things, I don't have children, but I think this is true for parents as well, is allowing your children to grow up and recognizing that they aren't babies anymore.
Yes.
And, you know, when you have your horses as babies, you're used to, you know, as you said, you're worried about harmony and let's make him happy. And Mary mm-hmm. says, he needs to be, wow, he's an FEI horse. He needs to be fancy. Mm-hmm. And you have to get to that point where you start to say, it's time to grow up.
Yes.
And, you know, you need to do more. And I trust you to do things. So,
well, yeah. And you know what I trusted him to do last week?
Yeah.
You're a big horse now. We were working and I did a beautiful line of fours.
Good.
And I came across the next diagonal and I did a beautiful line of threes.
Yay, you've got a pre-St. George horse now.
And I said, screw it, let's be greedy.
And you went for the twos.
I whipped off 8 twos.
Good for you.
I was like, oh my gosh, I'm getting off now before I mess this up. It was amazing. It was amazing.
Congratulations. He's like, that's not a baby horse anymore.
Woo. So yes. Yes. So lots of good things. Lots of good things. I am very blessed. For very many reasons, I feel like me and this horse coming together is kind of a God thing. And I am just very blessed that everything has happened and he's here and he's safe and his insurance is paid for a year. So we're good.
Wonderful.
We are good.
Well, we want to hear all about the process because, you know, I love the process. I mean, as we talked about, I mean, my thing is getting horses to second level. That's the thing that I just love so much. So you're in the process of teaching him all of the basics, which, you know, the rest of it is just tricks. The basics are the fun stuff.
100%.
So, you know, have a great time and tell us everything.
Okay.
Okay.
Well,
yay.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for sharing my joy with me.
Absolutely.
We have a really good question this month on the Ask the L. It comes from Jamie.
Okay.
And she wanted to know, if I start running into problems in my test and things are going wrong and I feel unsafe, am I allowed to dismount?
Wow, that's a really tough one. I think we've probably almost all been there at least once where we start to feel scared. And when you're schooling, you can do things like get off and throw your horse on a lunge line. Mm-hmm. In the middle of a test, it's a little bit trickier. You know, the rule of thumb is if there's a problem, you turn and you face the judge and you raise a hand and you tell the judge, there's something wrong, I'm afraid, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Or I'm lost. I mean, that's, you know, we address the judge with whatever the issue is. With naughty behavior, I have seen horses. Now, remember, I'm an L grad. I'm not talking necessarily about licensed competitions or CDIs. I have been at a championship show, and I saw a rider eliminated before she was ever even allowed in the ring because her horse
really?
Is, yes, it was terrifying to watch. It was a training level championship, and the horse was rearing and spinning and refused to go anywhere near the judge's booth, you know, going around the perimeter of the ring. Mm. And finally, the judge, you know, rang the bell and said, I'm sorry, I can't allow you to enter.
It wasn't a timing thing that they were over their time. It literally was.
It literally
that
was
they
dangerous.
Felt okay.
Now, the judge has the right to eliminate you if they feel that there is dangerous behavior in the arena. So if you're in the ring and your horse goes up in the air and spins and bolts and does all kinds of things, you very well may hear the whistle blow and, you know, the judge may say to you, hey, I don't think this is safe. I'm going to ask you to leave. And the judge has the right to do that. And if there is a disobedience that goes over a certain period of time, the judge is supposed to do that. But if you know, we're talking schooling shows here. We're talking about people who are just starting to show in a lot of cases, horses that have never been in the ring before. Everything is new.
Mm-hmm.
And and you may be riding around and your horse is doing absolutely nothing wrong, but you feel like you're sitting on a time bomb.
Mm-hmm.
And you are scared. And you feel like asking for that canter transition down there in intro C, you are, you know, something's going to happen. Your safety takes priority over everything. So if you're scared, tell the judge. If you don't feel like you can ride your horse safely out of the arena,
mm-hmm.
you've already ended your test. Get off and hand walk out. You know, I might get into trouble for this. I don't care what the rules are.
Right. Safety needs to come first.
Yeah. If you're scared, get off.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, some people say, oh, I feel safer on my horse's back than I do next to my horse.
Mm-hmm.
And if you feel that way, more power to you and go for it. But if you feel like you are in trouble and you are in danger, I don't care whether you're in the ring. I don't care whether you're in the warm-up. If you feel like you need to get off, get off.
Yeah.
Because if you feel like you need to be off, you probably do. And your safety comes first. But in terms of, you know, the correct protocol, you ask the judge's permission.
Okay.
You know, the judge has probably already figured out that there's something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've curled into fetal position. you know, something has happened. Your horse is bouncing off the ground. You know, mm-hmm. How many of us have seen the, you know, down center line, X, halt, salute, rear, spin, bolt the other direction?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was just telling somebody yesterday, there was a venue that I used to judge really regularly. And it was like the first person of every show was doomed. You know, one day it was the intro test, A, enter, X, halt, salute, rear, rider falls off.
Oh,
the
no.
Next test, it was the kid on the pony, A, enter, X, bolt, right through the tent for the trailers. So, you know, horses are big and they're dangerous. And if you feel like you're in danger, get off. If that's what you feel like you need to do, you need to get off. if you feel like you have the ability to tell the judge what's going on, tell the judge. If you don't feel like you can, wave your hand, get off, and then walk up to the judge and apologize.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm really sorry. I could feel that my horse was ready to explode. I'm a little scared. I'm asking to be excused. Because technically you have to be excused. You can't just leave on your own.
Okay.
But again, at a schooling show, go for it. Protect yourself. You know, I mean, there was, I knew somebody who was going for high scores. And if she was in the ring and she knew the test wasn't going well, she would ask to be excused. That's not kosher. But if you're afraid, go for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's the short answer.
Well, and I'm thinking about last year, I took Dante at the end of season to Global. And he had never been there. And we were under the covered. We were in the covered arena, which I thought no big deal. But it was a big deal for him because it was there was a lot of wind and the roof was groaning a lot.
Oh.
And he actually bolted with me in the warm-up. I scratched my test the first day because I just wasn't gonna. He was not okay, right? And I wasn't worried about me. But, you know, I'm bolting through a warm-up ring full of people. It was not the thing.
There's always one of you.
There's always one of us, right? Excuse me, pardon me, excuse me.
Yeah,
and so I, you know, I got him, we went around, you know, after the show, we walked around the arena and we, you know, did all that. And I got up really early and walked him around the arena the next day too. And he was better, but he still was really worried.
Yeah.
And I got him through the trot work and the test. And I did the walk work and I was just getting ready to start the canter work and somebody started their car and he was like, and I, you know, my trainer instinct is like, get it done. And then I went, wait a minute. This is more than I was able to accomplish yesterday. He is afraid. It's not going to go well. Because I had to do a medium canter down that long side right by the car that started. And I just said, he doesn't need this. The best thing for him, because he was scared, was
to tell him he was a good boy.
And I did. And I turned around. I just halted. I saluted the judge. So there was really, I mean, she could see he was tense.
Yeah.
But I don't know that we necessarily looked dangerous, but she could see there was a tremendous amount of tension and she very nicely allowed me to leave.
Yeah.
And I didn't have to get off in the ring because, you know, it wasn't like he was losing his ever-loving mind, just parts of it. But I got right outside the ring and I got off him there.
Yeah. And that's the way to do it. You know, the thing that we all need to remember is that every single judge, if they are not a current rider, was once a rider.
Mm-hmm.
We've all done it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, we've all had, I mean, for every story that you can tell, I can tell. You know, for every story that Kathy Connolly can tell, you know, she's been there, she's done that. And nobody wants to see a rider hurt. Nobody wants to see a horse traumatized.
Yes, 100%.
You know? So, you know, the answer to Jamie's question is do what's safe.
Yeah,
but
that's a great question.
Yeah, it really is, especially just now going into show season. And, you know, I don't know what the weather is like down at your end, but up here we have been having wind unlike anything I've ever experienced in my life. And it's like constant wind. And I've been doing all of these clinics and many of them have been indoor arenas, which seems like it should be safe, but the wind buffets against the walls and the roofs groan and, you know, stuff slides in under a door and, you know, it's really, really scary. And we need to remember that our horses are prey animals and, you know, yes, they need to be focused on us. And yes, they need to trust us that we are the leader and that we will protect them. But at the end of the day, they're animals. And their instinct is this is scary.
Yep.
This isn't right. I need to run away.
I might die.
Yeah. And, you know, that noise that I'm hearing may be the mountain lion coming through the door.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we need to be safe and we need to protect our horses. Because
yes,
most horses, when we fall off, it scares them.
Oh, it does. 100%.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because we have now bailed on them. We have left them
yep.
to deal with the danger on their own.
Yep.
So, you know, again, as a trainer, you do the thing that's right for your horse and you do the thing that's right for the training. And as a rider, you do what's right for you to be safe.
Yes.
So that's my answer. And I'm sticking with it.
Okay. I love that. I love that. So we're going to have a commercial break before we go to my interview with Kathy. And it was just amazing. I didn't even get in all the questions that we had talked about asking her because I'm just listening to her talk about her life and her, you know, how her horse world kind of developed and the people that she has come across. And, you know, there was not a sponsor. She's done this on her own. But some of her insights going back to when she was a kid in Pony Club, she did say, you know, she thinks the best thing anybody can ever have is a great, great set of parents because her parents instilled her both with confidence and with belief in herself. And she explains the difference between the two.
I can't wait to hear. I'm so
disappointed. My gosh. It was, I was almost like, I think we need to have a part two with her. So I'm really looking forward to sharing that with everybody. As always, if you like what we're doing, make sure to subscribe, share our podcast, and you can always get a hold of us, either one of us. If you have a question for Aviva or a topic you'd like us to talk about, you can get a hold of us via either of our social medias. And now a word from our sponsor. There's more talk than ever about the importance of probiotics in equine health. But not all probiotics are created equal. New Purina Systemic Supplement remains live and active after the pelleting process and throughout the digestive system, making it all the way to the hindgut. Systemic was designed to support normal recovery after exercise and occasional gastrointestinal stress. Whether you're using a probiotic now or not, it's time to use a live and active supplement from a name you trust. Visit mq.purinamills.com to try Purina Systemic Probiotic Supplement today. We are so honored to bring you Kathy Connolly. My only regret is that Aviva couldn't be with us today, but I know she'll listen to it and she'll be jelly, but she'll be glad that we got to do this. So Kathy, welcome. Thank you for being with me.
Thank you, Stephanie. It's an honor to be on this podcast, and I thank you for inviting me. And I am very grateful to all the people who listen and who are interested in this amazing, amazing sport and art form that we are all so interested in. But thank you for having me.
Yeah, we really, it's being able to just love our horses and dance around with them at the bottom of it, isn't it?
It is. That's it right there.
So people want to know who Kathy Connolly is. And I guess the easiest question to start with is, how did you get into horses?
Well, in terms of the history of that, I was very fortunate at 9 years old to become a member of the United States Pony Clubs, which at that time was a very foundational organization. It came from Great Britain. And then it came over here. And so many of us, George Williams, Robert Dover, Bruce Davidson and Eventing, I mean, so many in that era are people who grew up in that. And it was a big deal. It wasn't a small thing. One of the beauties of it was that it emphasized horsemanship and horse mastership and how to take care of a horse, stable management. Those were the criterion that were completely emphasized. Of course, with the 3-day event, which is what it was then, pony clubs since then have gone to being sometimes there's just a dressage division, et cetera, but that was all three. And when you're nine and you start doing it, it starts at the low level of the lowest level of D2, D3, then C, to be C1 and 2, then it was B. And then B is comparable to preliminary level when you're doing 3-day event. Then there's intermediate. Wow. And intermediate is the level I competed at, which is the highest level. And it's comparable to the intermediate level of 3-day eventing. It's only 4 inches lower than the Olympic level for jumping both 3-day fences, cross country, and the show jumping. So,
wow.
And then it was, I feel so blessed to be able to do that and to have had that. We had the most amazing, what was called district commissioner in Connecticut. And she was someone who had trained with Gordon Wright, who was someone who trained George Morris and other international riders. Jessica Ranshausen and George Morris, Jan would bring to the Pony Club when we were 11 years old and on up into our 20s to give us
crazy
clinics. And they kind of liked us. They did, actually. George Morris was used to teaching, and I don't mean this in an undermining way to anyone, but he was used to teaching riders who were extremely wealthy in New York, lower Connecticut than New York. Okay. And we were people who came from loving parents who did everything they could to help us, but we didn't have, most of us didn't have horses bought for us because we couldn't afford it. So Jan, we could afford to take care of one and all that, but Jan would get them donated to the Pony Club. Now, Pony Club sounds like ponies, but it's not. It's horses. There are some ponies, but the divisions B and A level are very gifted, regular big horses. Okay. And she would get donated, often by people, like, again, in that area who, that part, New York and Connecticut and Massachusetts, all the people whose horses were not really what they would want them to be doing. So they would send them to us. And then Jan would help us and we would train them. And as I said, we had great people. George, Jessica, Hugh Wiley came, and we had other people. Michael came, not Michael Pullen, I have to think. Anyway, and so we had many, many good people. And then it went on to competing. And we competed. She was very good at what she did. We would go into the national rallies, which was C level, B level, and then the intermediate level, which is the top level, and that was the A division. And through the grace of God and our great trainer and these wonderful horses, we often would win. And we were kind of a, I don't want to say rugrats. I mean, we worked like anything. We took care of our horses. Number one to us was loving them, being around them, being grateful to people who donated them. I mean, we weren't little paupers, but we were hard workers. And she would have every Friday, she would have us come in and we would do the book work. We would read the Pony Club manual. We would read all these other things. And so we were just fortunate to have her. And so that's what we did when we were young. And then I was fortunate to win the A division of the National Pony Club Rally, which was held in Myopia in Massachusetts. And so that was very exciting. And there were 24 in that. And my horse's name was Desert Song. He had a heart of gold. He was an Anglo Arab, actually, and very athletic. Lendon Gray competed in that also, in that particular one.
Wow.
And a number of people, Bruce Davidson was in it. A lot of people who were people who, you know, later on counted in what they did in terms of those things. And then also I got chosen to go, there was a thing called the International Pacific Competition, which would be held in different places. So it was 6 countries, Australia, New Zealand, England, Great Britain, Japan, and Canada and the United States. So I was chosen to go to that for the United States. I was one of the 6 team members.
Wow.
So what happened is we'd fly over there and then they provided us with horses.
Okay.
Because it wasn't that we'd be flying our horses there. That we were there for a month. It was incredible. We got to do all kinds of everything. We met our ambassador to Australia. We run TV programs, radio programs. Now,
and how old were you when this happened?
I was 19.
Okay.
But
wow.
Right. And so the other five didn't really they were all great. They didn't want to talk or be the one doing it. Well, I was really shy, but I thought, okay. When I was 11, I thought I'd walk up and down the hill from feeding my horse, and I'd think, I'd give myself little lectures. I'd say, okay, you're very shy. That's okay. But there's two things in life. One is you have to have confidence, and the other one is believing in yourself. And those are two different things. And I would define what those two different things were.
At 11 years old.
Well, I only remember it because I kept a notebook. Okay, this is part of our pony club.
That's amazing.
So, and then I thought, okay, believing in yourself comes first. Confidence comes after you believed in yourself and you did it. And I thought there are four things we have to think about. And that is, you have to believe in your horse, and you have to, you know, the horse has to believe in himself. Mm-hmm. The horse believes in you, but you don't deserve that unless you believe in you. And then you should not ask a horse to go out and do those courses and everything unless you believe all four things. Now, he was an astounding horse. He was very, this will sound like bragging, so maybe you shouldn't put this in, but he really had a thing with me, and he would jump anything for me, and I wasn't afraid of anything. I wasn't. So
this is your horse that you were riding, the Desert Song horse.
Desert Song. Okay. And he was donated to the Pony Club by a man in Milton, Massachusetts, and he wasn't trained to jump or anything then, but she was such a trainer, and we believed in her. So we did that, and we won. And then I got, as I said, chosen to go to Australia. So that was fantastic. And that was a big deal. The Governor General was there. He was the Queen's designated person to be there. And we were given horses. The other thing with it is that they were not a litigious culture at all.
Okay.
The fun part about it was, like, the cross country course was very, it was the normal height. It was the highest height that you have for A division. And my horse was a green horse. He was a 6-year-old. And I thought, okay. So one of the great things about cross country and riding young horses and jumping is, because I trained a lot of horses, 3-day horses, is that if they couldn't run out, they'd go over it. You know, they learn to run out before they learn to just stop, because they'll slide into it, so they don't want to do that. So all I had to do was keep them there, even when they're doing the hula back and forth, looking for a way out. So he was great. He jumped everything. And there was one jump that was a sharp corner turn into this very high fence that had not, it wasn't a very wide fence. It was a big one and had a good depth into it when you jump it. But on the sides were steel wire. Okay. The kind that, you know, what's it called? Barbed wire. It was that kind of sides. Now, the other thing was, to the right was this path that went over into some shrubs. And I thought, I better go and look at that, because this is a young horse. He's likely to run out. I have to see what's over there. So I walked over in a foot, and I looked down. It was a 30-foot drop into the river after you go through the bushes.
Oh, my gosh.
No, it was going over there. So we're only going to jump these fences. And so actually it was really fun, and we had a great time. So that was a wonderful experience. And that's how it got started. That goes up to like you're 20 or something. Okay. And then I stayed in the 3-day thing. I competed some horses after, but then I segue into dressage later.
And what made you decide to go, you know, more strictly into dressage?
Well, I had competed and done that I had just mentioned. And then, of course, dressage is a huge part of the 3-day.
Sure.
And I always liked dressage a lot. So I thought, And I taught 3-day up through 28 years old. Denny Emerson, Tad Coffin, and I had the three biggest 3-day event businesses in New England. And then I thought, you know what? I want to focus on dressage because I think what I'd like to try to do is make the U.S. dressage team sometime because, you know, I hadn't done Olympic level 3-day, but I did what I did in IFA. So then I wanted to become good at it. And I was fortunate to, I had trained a number of horses in dressage because of the fact that I did the 3-day part. And I mean, in training mm-hmm. other people. And my 3-day event people were fantastic because I always said to them that when they get nervous, there was one mm-hmm. that had polio, there were ones that were in there that had were afraid. There's some that weren't. There's some that had better horses than others. But I was a total believer in believing you can do it. Not something unrealistic, but something that you can do it. And then I would say to them, we'd walk the cross country course, mm-hmm. and I try to get them not to be afraid. So what I would do is, I thought it's better if they're afraid of me than they're afraid of the jumps. So, they're never mean. I was never mean. I don't believe in belittling someone or whatever, but they knew I thought that they could do it and they'd have to march along with me while I did the cross country walk. Then I wanted them to pay attention while they were doing it. So I'd say, okay. So when we get to jump 9, they had to, one of them I'd pick out, they never knew which one, would have to go 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. They'd have to tell me backwards and forward what it was. Because I said, you have to be the cross country course. You can't just kind of be like this. You have to be it. And when you are, you have less time to think about being afraid of it. And then I said, you know, this is reasonable for every single one of you. I know all your horses. I know you. And they were just astounding. And one person came and she won. And they said, what do you credit your win to? And the person said, I didn't want to come back, having been the only person that didn't think I could do it. I went there believing I did. And I was very proud. They were all like that. The one that had polio, she was amazing. Hers was a lower level, but she was great. Mm. So, you know, like we would talk about things and I say, you know, we can't ask them to do this unless we believe in ourselves. I believe in you. Could you please believe in you? Because, and I never battered them, but I said, I really believe in you. So that was what was so great because I got taught that young. So you try to pass that on to other people you really believe in.
So, well, you do that. You do that really well because I know that from personal just working with you that is one of the things you prop people up when you are teaching them and let them see the shiny side of themselves instead of just the manure stained side.
That's so sweet. Well, I think that talent is very important. Believing in yourself is more important. There are people who are very gifted who don't believe in themselves. And there are people who very much believe in themselves and they don't let a ceiling be put on their sky. My parents taught us that. They said, don't let anyone put a ceiling on your sky. What matters is how you believe in yourself in anything you do. And so that was inculcated in me. And then, you know, we were just fortunate to grow up. I think one of the greatest gifts in life is getting good parents. And so that was the 3-day part. And then I decided to go into dressage. And I bought a horse for Robert Dover and I were actually walking the cross country. I was a judge for United States Pony Club as I was head of the stable management committee. Mm-hmm. I was the first female governor, junior governor, to be put into the United States Pony Club process. It had always been guys before.
Wow.
When we graduated from Pony Club at 21, they would choose someone. And one of them was this wonderful dear, I adore him to this day, Tom Ordway. They asked him, and he so sweetly said, thank you for asking me, but I think you should ask Kathy Conley. He said, she just won, you know, the 3, whatever. And he said, I think you should ask her because it's time for it to be a woman. Now, this was, I really admire him for that. And once he was sure he didn't want to do it, I did it. That was interesting. And Jessica Ranshausen at that time made a program called the Traveling A Program in the United States.
Okay.
So what she did that for was so that we A Pony Clubbers would go around the country giving clinics to all the pony clubs throughout the country. Now, that was a very visionary thing for her to do.
Wow.
And that's what we did. So I got asked to go, because of the good fortune of the things that had happened, I was asked to go all around the country doing these. And I did, and I loved that. And that was a stepping stone to going into this as an occupation.
Okay.
At that time, being a horse trainer was not really a very deeply steeped occupation.
Okay.
Because, you know, I went to college, I went to graduate school.
And what was your degree in?
Well, I double majored in journalism, publications, and English literature.
Oh, wow.
I loved that. And I went to Vienna junior year, which I'll get. That was incremental in everything I did. I decided to go in college junior year to Vienna because the Spanish riding school was there. And I wanted to study at the University of Vienna. All the courses were in English, but I wanted to study. But I went every day to the Spanish riding school before German class in the morning. I'd go at 7 o'clock and I'd watch from they would actually do it right in Vienna. Where that was, I would watch from the balcony. You had to pay 6 cents. It was an odd, you know. So, and I would watch. And that was when Michael Handler's father was head of it, Colonel Handler. And all sorts of people were in that. Ernst Bockinger was in that. Kodas. I mean, all these others who later became
the
that have been there now. And then 20 years later, I went to Vienna with my stallion Beethoven to work with Ernst Bockinger. The Spanish riding school, because I'd already gone in there, and there'd be this guy who'd be sitting outside the stables when I was in college there, and you're not supposed to go in the stalls, and I just had to go. You know how we are. You have to be near them. You have to touch them. You cannot go if there's
money. Yes.
So I thought the worst that can happen is I'll get thrown out, or I'll call Michael if I get arrested. So I waited till he fell asleep and I tiptoed in, and then I went into, you know, they're all stallions, but they're very well behaved. And I walked into the stall and I shut the door. There's those metal things you have to do quietly. And I would kneel under where they're the grain thing. And I was just that they're so friendly. So you get to touch them and do all the things. And
yeah,
you know, that was a beautiful experience. And then I came back from the United States, and that was a big impetus too, to get into the dressage.
Cool. Yeah, I can imagine to see that and to see them schooling. And that was all men at that point, wasn't it?
It was
It was still all men at the Spanish riding school at that point.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
And at the end was where the queen would sit, you know, and they would, you know, watch it with the performances, and I would go in and watch performances, and I'd be up in the, you know, attic area that you sit. And then after I went to go to Bockinger's, I was very fortunate because he would get, you know, he'd get me tickets that were right there. But that's an amazing place. And that's when I first saw the real longlining. I was 20. Okay. And I saw the longlining that OJ called, the airs above the ground, all this stuff that was going on. So I later on, 20 years later, went back to train with him because I wanted to be good at longlining and all those things. I thought, I think I'll just go to one of the best in the world. So I did that and brought my horse over. And then because I saw the relationship of longlining to riding, to training, to all of it. It's not essential, but it is magical. If people don't have to do it to ride in Olympics, but when you know how to do it, it's a whole other thing.
Well, and you are one of the most proficient people I've seen do it. And that makes a lot of sense now. Why is that you've been doing it for that long and you got to see it at such a high level from the beginning. It wasn't like you were watching somebody do some backyard longlining.
No, I was fortunate. You know, you wonder sometimes, it wasn't that I grew up with a lot of money. I grew up with a lot of dreams and how to make them, help them come true. Your hopes, I would say hopes.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just figured out ways to do it. So what I would do is, I built my own farm, but I made all the money for these things. And then I had wonderful staff that worked for me. Most of them are my very close friends now. And yeah, so I wanted to go and do that. And then he came, I invited him to my farm to do a clinic. So, and then later, I should say this part because there's a thread here. When we get to my trainers were, can I go into mm-hmm. that part?
Absolutely.
Jan Conant was the foundational one that I said from 9 years old through a lot of my beginning 20s. Then I did some of the people I talked with about, went to. And then I went to Bockinger, but I'd gone to Herbert Rabein. I went to him several times. And I went with him with Bockinger, I did what I did, but I'd been to Herbert twice before. And I always, one of the things I really believe in ethics in what we do as trainers, riders, and in our sport is that I always honor every single person who's ever helped me. I don't not know who those people were. Sometimes that happens in this industry. That's fine. For me, it's not fine. I want to give credit to everybody who's ever helped me because I think that it's always a building block. We didn't just arrive somewhere because we are whatever, you know. And so then I'd been to Herbert twice, and then I said to Herbert, it's the Olympics and you're going to be coaching our team. I'd like to go to Ernst to work on longlining with Beethoven, and I want to bring Beethoven here next year. Will that be good with you? He said, yes, that's fine. You know, that's good. So when I went to Herbert's, Ernst called me, and I had such a good time with both of them. They're both very similar, but I'll tell about that. So Ernst called me. He said, you know what? He said, I think I'm going to come over with my wife. She was delightful. And I'm going to work with Herbert some. Now, you know, these are two same level people. They're down to earth. They're not. So he came there with his wife. He said, because Herbert could really help me with the pirouettes. And then Herbert, of course, they're both geniuses on Piaf. So, you know, they're like this. What happened is they came and they had dinner and they invited me and all that. But these are these two people. What I find truthfully is, because I've been fortunate to experience a lot of things in this world, in the higher echelons, I'm not higher echelon, but the upper echelons are these people who created all these industries, the dressage industry in all these different countries.
Mm-hmm.
And what's amazing is, I could name more, they're humble. They're humble people. Herbert Rabein was one of the most ever Bockinger too. And Herbert never cared how much money someone had or anything like that. He cared how much you loved your horse, how much you were willing to do, and you being truthful and all of that. So, you know, I had other great experiences. I had a wonderful horse, Enterprise, who I competed for the U.S. team in the World Cup. And I actually was over in Europe looking for horses that people had sent me to find for them. And then I went to this one place. It was a dealer's barn. And I saw all the horses, and they had to show me, and I liked some of them very much. And I looked over, and there was this, it was in the back in the dark. And I walked over, and there was a horse in a hot-wired stall who was over in the corner. And I went over to try to open the door. They said, don't go in there. He's dangerous. And I said, okay. And I said, what do you know? What about him? They said, well, we haven't tried him yet. You know, we don't know what he's like. I said, can I try? He was Danish, no papers. Okay. Lots of times, if there are no papers, it can mean there's something in the history that's not good. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. So they brought him out, and Johnny rode him. Johnny is this wonderful man everyone loves worldwide. Johnny is, he just passed away. German.
Oh, that Johnny, yes.
Johnny, who is co-chef to keep with, you know, Monica Teodorescu for the Germans. So he's a very good friend after all this, after I got to know him. So he rode him. And I got him and rode him, and I thought, he's only like fourth level, but I thought, and he was really thin. He had long hair. He ground his teeth. And I thought, and I, so I said, how much is he? And they told me, and I thought, I'm going to buy him. I just had bought my farm. It was 1985. But I thought, okay, somehow I'm going to do this because, and I prayed, this is what I do. I say, okay, God, you know, if this, you know me, I said, I want to buy every one of them. So and I don't have money, but I really, if this is the right thing, please let me know, because then I'm going to do it. And you're always there for everything. So, it, you know, I bought him. And then I didn't find out till after 3 years later, he was United States World Cup champion.
Wow.
And then he was also went to the World Cup, and he also was on the a silver medal, bronze medal team at the North American Championships. He was the highest Grand Prix horse placed at that level of bronze medal. But anyhow, he had been severely abused. I don't want to go into it now. It's way too sad what happened. Mm. It happened. And when you find that out, and you, what it does in you, it, there's a very still place in us that is touched by the magnitude of a creature who's been that abused, whether it's a human being or an animal of some sort, to ever forgive enough to try for someone. And he did. That's what he did. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't really safe to ride for people who didn't know him. I never could. Later, when he retired, I couldn't really have people get on because he would still, he had a porpoise buck. He didn't rear. Mm. But what he would do is he would scoot, he'd lower his hind end and he would leap into the air and do a porpoise buck. But I had been a 3-day rider, so I wasn't afraid.
Right. Right. You had a good background for that.
And then also, he wasn't easy to lead around, he was dangerous. So I had to have one person trained just to handle him because I was training and running my farm and I had to go do all those things. Mm-hmm. But they had to wear a hard hat to be able to lead him, because not only could he get you, you know, he could twist and kick you or he would, you know, and so, and it didn't work with him to hit him or something. He'd already had that, you know, so he learned to be a horse who could trust some people, and I kept one person with him for him. Mm, but mm-hmm. Anyway, yeah, so that was really a blessing
to have. And that was so, Enterprise. That was his name.
Enterprise.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I flew with him on airplanes. He went. I always was my groom for my horse. I would bring someone with mm-hmm. me when I rode at any event, but when I flew to Stockholm to compete in the World Cup, mm-hmm. which was in southern Sweden, I flew in and worked with Herbert for a month. And then the best way to get there was to go over the North Sea on a ship. Mm. You know, so traveled, it's sort of like Paul Revere.
By land and by sea.
Exactly, the land by the sea. So anyway, so, and it was, you know, one of those big ships with 5 restaurants, but I always stayed with him everywhere, including, I flew in 747s with him, but he also mm-hmm. flew in a 727. At one point, we had to go from northern Germany to Sweden another time. And it was only a 2-horse plane. It was a small plane, a 727. So and he had long ears. And they told me that I couldn't stay with him during takeoff. And I had to stay with him because that particular, when you have the what they go in, it looks like a stall to them. It's this metal. Mm-hmm. Usually there's a top over them, like on the 747s. Mm-hmm. But the 727 didn't have a top on it. And so he was breast high. So when they would take him, when they took him out onto the runway, you know, where they load them in the hangar, but then when they take him inside, then he was looking like he was going to jump out. And I was standing on this little lip that was on the thing and petting him and doing stuff so I could keep his attention. Mm-hmm. And so I stayed with them on the takeoff and landing. So there's a lot of adventures, you know, you go across the sea, you go, but again, what horses will do for you, they'll do anything.
Yes.
We know that, you know it, we all know it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's up to us to honor it and not take advantage of it.
Yeah, it's important that the most important thing, I think, when we get on a horse is to feel at home so they can feel at home. Mm. And that takes time. It takes a person who is going to be that, not a person who gets them to do something, but a person who can move into where a horse is. So, I mean, they allow so much from us. We know the thing that's out everywhere now, and it's always been the case where when you get within a few feet of a horse, they can feel your heartbeat and they adjust theirs to it. Mm-hmm. And you go back to them, when you touch them, acupressure points like the ones I've shown you, when you do those things, they go into their parasympathetic nervous system. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, then they only be where you are. They don't want to be somewhere else. It's like a child that takes the mommy's hand and will walk through anywhere. But if you have to be that for that horse, and then they'll go wherever you want them to go, you know, instead of, you know, the other. So it's, yeah.
It is refreshing. Maybe refreshing is not the word. It is heartwarming to hear someone who has accomplished what you have accomplished and who travels and works at the levels of this sport that you work at, to say, to talk about the connection of the horse. It really is. Because I think so many people feel that the higher levels of the sport can vice the horse. Mm-hmm. So to hear someone who has done what you've done, and you are all about honoring the horse, that's just amazing. It really is.
Well, thank you for saying that. I think always we don't have the right to get on a horse that we don't treat the way that he thinks, he feels, and he is. And that doesn't mean that we don't have to be judicious about how we help them understand a thing. If they don't do something, it's for one of two reasons. They can't, because they hurt, or because they don't understand. And that is one person, one creature, one soul. That's us. If they don't do something, instead of thinking, like when people say, he did this, he did that, that's a turnoff for me as a trainer right to begin with, because they only do things because they don't know what to do. They don't do it to, and if it's a bucking thing or whatever, then we deal with that. I mean, I know lots of modalities for those things, because having been a 3-day rider, having been on 3-day horses, on ones that aren't, and all the rest. And then sometimes it takes longer, but the best shortcut is the long way with anything you do. And it has to be along the same thinking. And it has to be discipline of yourself and to know how to do that with the horse, because when you get into dressage is simple. It's not easy, but it's simple. Yeah. And I think the other thing about it, these are just some thoughts I have, is, you know, one of the ethereal aspects of horses that we can always count on the magic with them. And this comes from the fact that they're spiritually based also, as we are, not so much in like what God and all that, but they were created, in my opinion, by one creator who did all this for us. We're part of all this. We're not the only all this. And this comes from the fact that they are spirit based, as are we. And once they give us their heart, they'll give us their mind, and they'll give us their soul. So what is sacred is that they trust enough to choose us. We think it's just us choosing them. But in the end, when we go through these things, they have to choose us. The ones who go in there. And I'll use an example, Adrian Lyle on Selvi. You know, he chose her too. Okay. I went, because I have had certain positions with USEF. I've been fortunate to go in different places of the world with our team when it's been competitions, pre-Olympics, pre-championships, all that. So you see, you do see quite a few combinations like that. But what horses do for us is they change our horizons forever. They do that even when you walk in the stall, because of the love you feel for them, because we have been given the gift to love them. They have been able to respond to us. And I think they ignite an eternal light in our soul that helps us to believe in ourselves. It's that whole thing we were talking about before. Because it's not fair to ask them to do anything if we don't believe in them and we don't believe in ourselves. then you're asking them to go out there by themselves. And that's not what it's about. So kindness is one of the number one things, and always doesn't mean kindness like in, you have to be knowledgeable, a knowledgeable horseman. Kindness is free. It's, kindness is the most important power on the earth. And most of all, we have to learn when we have that with them, they'll do whatever we ask. And then we find their gifts. And only after that do we find our gifts, because we have to take our time to go through what all this really is, which is a spiritual process along with a lot of knowledge and experience. So that was probably too long an answer, but
I think that was a beautiful answer. I really do.
And
I really do.
Feel bad about your horse. I've watched you countless times. You know, so many of the same people that I know that come for help to me or to other people. And it's something, you know, we know how we feel. Okay. 1% of the pony club riders ever become A pony clubbers. Okay. I don't know what to say, what, and maybe they didn't have horses who could do that level. You know, mine was a horse that we found out could. But when you think in our industry, when we walk in, when a rider comes into me, I don't judge them by how tall they are, how short they are, how much they weigh, whatever. I think about what connection you see, because a lot of people come in having a feeling that they can never be beyond a certain thing or beyond a certain way or up to a, whatever level. Well, we have to be realistic. Some horses don't have talent for a Grand Prix. Some
sure.
And it's the same with other things. It's really about what the mosaic is for people and what this relationship means to them. And it's not expecting them to have human qualities. It's expecting us to discover what qualities they have and to give them confidence. And then they'll do anything. Look at the jumps they jump, you know.
So yeah.
And I think the other thing, I am a judge too, by the way. And here it says, I never became a judge.
I know. And I felt terrible. I said that. And I was like, I looked on your bio and I went, oh, she is a judge. Great job, Stephanie. Great job.
No, but you know what? I'm an S judge. I love doing it, but I love training horses.
And yes.
That's my favorite thing. And then the other is an honor to be. And I love commentating. It's fun.
I love listening to you because you're very positive about what's going on. You're very calm, but you're informative at the same time. You're educating people without being mean about it.
Well, I think, you know, I commentated for Devin for years, and then I got asked in 2010. Brian was going to be the announcer at the World Championships in Lexington, 2010. And they said, who would you recommend as a commentator? And he recommended me, and he called me, and he asked me, and I said, sure. And after I hung up, I said, why did I say what I do? This is the World Championships. And I thought again, what you think, okay, I'm going to do this. I don't have to be the best person doing it. There's always someone better, but it's nothing that, and then I've been doing it for years and I really enjoy it. I think what commentators, I believe, need to be is people who are, they're sportscasters. They're not in the, you don't want a football game or a baseball game or a tennis thing. You will never hear a commentator say, oh, what a stupid move that was, you know, or don't do that. So when people say, some people say, you know, what you say is what you're seeing. Mm-hmm. And then when it's something, for example, like a shoulder in with a tilt and the inside ear, I'll say the reason it happened, the angle needs, you know, I do that. But if someone makes a mistake or has a catastrophic thing happen, which they would consider catastrophic, your job as a commentator is to support the sport and support the reasons people are here and support the entire thing we're doing, both honor the horse and rider. And you can, what I say is, that's too bad that happened. And it was clearly because he spooked, or he lost his confidence. But when you think about this, most people that are watching this who are riders have had something like that happen to them.
So
you won't hear other riders saying negative things, because they already know what that feels like.
Yeah. Well, and ultimately they're horses, and you know, they They feel different day to day, and you can prep for everything that you think you might encounter, and they still see something and they go, no, can't. That's, yeah. I mean, it is the nature.
Mm-hmm. Right. It is. And we are in the top 1% of blessed people on the earth to be able to live in the horse planet. That's how I look at it. We got left dropped down in a horse planet, and we need to be that planet for them, because of their cooperation with everything we ask them to do.
Kathy, that was beautiful. And I think that that is a great place for us to end today. Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing your wisdom. Thank you for sharing your thoughts beyond the typical, this is how one does a shoulder in, but showing how your journey, being a person who didn't have a lot of money, but had a lot of heart and a lot of confidence and a lot of belief in yourself, how that can take place, and how if you love your horse, you don't really know how far you can go. Mm-hmm. There's no limits.
And you know, I thank you for everything you said, and I think you just capsulized it well about what they're like. And
yes,
thank you for asking me to be on this.
Absolutely. Honor. Absolutely. I have enjoyed it tremendously.
Well, you're a joy, truthfully. You're a total joy.
Thank you.